Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Amber Wilson in for Key and Jay, but the man's got me working on Juneteenth. Outrageous. Nuno, explain yourself.
I had nothing to do with that.
Dan Graziano, ESPN NFL Insider, with us now. Morning, Graz.
Morning, Max. Amber, how you doing?
Well, that's some vicious delay we're dealing with here.
Hello?
Okay. No, it's good. I'm going to send a postcard, Dan. Just write your response. I'll send a self-addressed envelope. What's...
Pony Express.
Yeah. What's the latest with DeAndre Hopkins going to the Patriots? By the time Dan responds, he'll be on the Patriots. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, went to that visit in New England last week. I'm told it went very well. There's mutual interest there. It's just a matter of DeAndre Hopkins kind of taking some time now and assessing his market and seeing if any more market develops. He was in Tennessee earlier in the week. That visit went well. They have interest also. It's just the timing, Max, right now with mini camps over and training camps still more than a month away. There's really no rush to be anywhere. So if DeAndre Hopkins wants to wait and see if other teams get interested, maybe the contract offers go up a little bit, that could be to his benefit. So, yes, mutual interest with him in New England, that could happen. But at this point, what I was told is each side kind of taking time to assess where they stand and what the potential timetable is for a deal.
If it went really, really well, I feel like he wouldn't have walked out of that facility without a deal, but I understand he is taking his time. Let's talk about the Giants and Saquon Barkley. What's happening there with their talks?
Nothing. Look, the deadline on Saquon Barkley is July 17th. If you don't do a long-term deal with him by then he has to play on the franchise tag or not play at all if that's his decision. So what happens is these talks for franchise players kind of pick back up again in that last couple of days before that deadline. And then sometimes deals get done and sometimes they don't. So I would expect a little more activity, closer to that deadline of July 17th. But right now there has been no movement of any substance on that, negotiation here in a couple of months from what I've been told. And I think the Giants are okay with him playing on the franchise tag. They would do a deal. There are deals out there they would do, but so far it hasn't been anything that Saquon has felt was representative of what he's worth.
So, Dan, you know how I feel about that. I hope they get something done, but then again, if Saquon is going to play on the franchise tag ultimately,
sure.
I suppose that's actually the smart thing for – well, generally that's a smart thing for them, for a team to do. In this case, it may not be. Time will tell. Which quarterback has the most on the line, do you think, Dan, this upcoming year?
In the whole league, I think Tua Tagovailoa is the one that jumps to mind for me. And the issue with Tua is really not all the way in his control, right? It's can he stay healthy? And the health issues last year were concussion issues, so that's not a matter of, like taking care of your, soft tissues and that kind of thing. Like it could be out of his hands. But I do think that with the roster they've built there in Miami that looks ready to contend, the way he played last year when he was on the field, surrounded by those players, I think there's high-end potential there. And if he's unable to stay on the field, then if you're Miami, this time next year, you're probably thinking about what the other options are. I know they picked up his fifth-year option for 2024, but... they're not committed beyond that, and he's got to show he's somebody who can stay on the field and produce the way he did last year.
Dan Graziano, ESPN NFL Insider, joining us here on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. So, Graz, you are naming Tua in the Miami Dolphins, Tua with the most pressure across the league. I mean, as a Dolphins fan, I tend to agree with that, but also at the same time, I wonder if I'm hyper-focused here on just the Miami Dolphins. I know in Dolphins Nation, we are tired of having the conversation of whether Tua can stay healthy, but is that the only question, though, that you're alluding to, or do you think that there's still questions there in terms of his accuracy and how good he can actually be?
I think we saw the high-end performance last year when he was on the field. So the question, of course, as it would be for any young quarterback that's establishing himself as a reliable starter in the league, is can he sustain it? And the reasons he couldn't sustain it last year were largely beyond his control because of the concussion issues. So I think, yeah, if he's able to stay healthy all year, I think he has to deliver a year that makes him look like the fifth pick in the draft, right? I mean, that's who he's supposed to be, and that's a great player. So, yes, I think it's an important year for him. Most pressure of anyone in the league. I mean, it was just the first name that popped into my head. I think it's a good answer because I think that's a team that could be very, very good if everything, you know, if everything clicks, the new defensive coordinator and all those great pieces they have there. They're in a tough division, a tough conference, but I think the range of outcomes there is vast and includes some pretty good stuff if Tua Tagovailoa can be the player he was drafted to be.
Could have gone with Aaron Rodgers, Dak Prescott, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson.
Sure.
You had a whole bunch of people to choose from.
All good answers.
You took Tua Tagovailoa, who plays very well, but, you know, they allowed him out on the field 4 days after an obvious concussion that they said wasn't a concussion, and then we got another bad concussion. That's the whole issue with Tua Tagovailoa. Well, listen, Dan Graziano.
I said it wasn't all in his control.
Dan Graziano, with, you know, he's given better answers than Tua, in my opinion, to a question like that.
I think it was an excellent answer, Dan.
I think that, yeah, Dan's reacting.
Thank you.
Something I said
I do, too.
Now, given the delay. Dan, it's always a pleasure. I will talk to you later today, I am sure.
Go ahead and do this on it. All right.
All right. There it is. Dan Graziano, ladies and gentlemen. Amber, I would normally keep Dan around a little longer, but I'm just getting back in the mail his answers from when we asked, and there's a vicious delay there. But I want to get into Tua Tagovailoa. You asked if Dan felt it was an issue of performance or just availability. To me, it's clearly just an issue of availability. What is the sense in Miami, though?
Availability. I mean, that's the key here. That's why he doesn't get the extension, or we presume that he's not going to get the extension that you would typically absolutely see for a quarterback who you took fifth overall in the draft and a quarterback who has performed. But the reason I ask that question is because if you really break it down for when he's performed, what, half a season that nobody had any questions about Tua? Because under Brian Flores' entire tenure there with Tua, his first few seasons there, you had questions about how good he actually was. You had questions about Tua's arm strength consistently and over again. The only thing you didn't question with Tua was the accuracy, which is the one thing that we kept getting fed over and over, but it almost felt like at a certain point that it was like a Dolphins PR campaign. Then you saw it finally with the entrance of Mike McDaniel and also with the health of Tua and no backup truly breathing down his neck because he had that whole weird thing with Fitzpatrick earlier in his career as well. This felt like his season this past season, and then the injuries with the concussions and the lack of availability because the concussions start adding up. He's a quarterback that we think of as injury prone, Max, because it stems back to college and he was such a high profile quarterback in college, even though not all the injuries have been the same injury. Maybe it's not completely fair to him, but there are real, real concerns. There have always been real concerns with Tua concerning his availability, and that's why they're not going to extend him. And if you don't extend a quarterback and he's on a fifth year option, there's a ton of pressure on that dude because otherwise the message there is we're probably moving on.
Well, look, in terms of the availability, he came into the league with certain injury issues, and sometimes that happens, especially in this day and age, to a not so tall and also not so fast, even if he's mobile quarterback, right? That's the danger. But as far as I'm concerned, he's answered the questions in terms of his body. The issue for me has been, and I'm wondering what the blowback on Mike McDaniel has been, or even if it was presumed that he was under pressure to play Tua. But to me, the issue is the concussion. I've watched, you know, the fight game long enough to know if a fighter rushes back sometimes from head trauma, you know, he can almost be like rewired, where if he gets knocked out again after that, every time he gets hit, he's reacting as though he's, you know, in a fog. His legs go. And Tua, for me, the real issue was the first thing was clearly a neurological event. Are you a doctor? Do you know it's a concussion? No, but see that right there? We just showed on ESPN 2. That's a neurological event going on right there. That ain't his, oh, it's his back. Ugh, it's his
I'm
leg.
Cringing. I'm cringing so, rewatching the videos on ESPN 2 because every time his head slams into that turf, just slams. He consistently has an issue with that. But Max,
but
if
wait,
that
hold
is
on, but
correctable.
Amber, so what I'm asking is after that first one, 4 days later on a short week, it was like 100 hours later, he's back in the game. And that time when his head hit, you said the one that you're cringing at, his fingers were splayed and rigid, right? It looked like a fighter getting knocked out viciously. That is what I'm concerned about. Is there a sense that Mike McDaniel was under pressure from the organization to play him? Was that his call? I mean, in Miami, are the fans, is there any consternation toward the front office or toward the coach that they allowed that to happen? Because now I think I have legitimate concern about his availability going forward based on that. What happens the next time, the euphemism is he gets his bell rung, right?
I think that we're done with that conversation, right? Like, we've had that conversation. The NFL changes rules because of what happened there with Tua. Now you have the independent evaluator looking at all of these hits in addition to the doctors, and they have to be cleared, and there's even more protocol. So I feel like we had that conversation. Everybody was hypercritical of the Miami Dolphins and how they handled that situation with Tua. And listen, the Dolphins also don't want to risk the long-term health of their quarterback. I feel like that's what's missed here. Why would you want to? I understand that we...
That was what was so odd about it, you know? Like, why would they make the decision to let him back out on, much like KD, I mentioned earlier in the show, oh, it's his calf, stop everyone. Everyone knows what an Achilles looks like. Then he goes out there, you're like, wait, what are you doing? And it snaps, right? Same sort of thing where they're like, no, it's this. The whole world is like, no, it's that. Then 4 days later, it's clearly that. And now his future's up in the air. It's bizarre. I agree with you. Why would they want to risk it? And yet they seem to be willing to. And that's saying something since Mike McDaniel had been so outstanding as a head coach till that point.
I mean, I think you're listening to your medical professionals, right? I think you're trusting your medical professionals. We know that there's some flaws in that system. The reality is, though, they're trying to address it this offseason. It is the way that Tua falls seems to be the problem there, and they feel like they can correct that. He's been taking the jiu-jitsu. He's been learning to fall differently. We'll see if, in fact, they can actually correct that. But you know, if there is that contact with the turf and he looks like that again, it will certainly be handled more cautiously moving forward, even just from a PR perspective. Nevertheless, the long-term health of the future of their franchise.
If he can dance between the raindrops, the Dolphins can win the Super Bowl. That's how good they are. That's how good he looked last year. But the question is, in the sport, in a 17-week season in the NFL, I don't mean he's out for 2 or 3 weeks. You have Mike White. That's a nice backup. I mean, another neurological event takes place, right? Then it's like, oh my God. And if not for that, I think certainly they'd be one of my top 3 or 4 teams to win the Super Bowl, but I got to see it. Anyway, the Heat missed out on Bradley Beal. We'll stay in Miami for a second. But in fact, he's going to Phoenix. So, but what's next for the Heat? Keyshawn, J. Will and Max, Amber Wilson, KJM.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric e-bikes today. The number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Electric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C, ebikes.com.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Amber Wilson in for the guys on this Juneteenth. But the man has me working. I guess that's right. You know what? White people get to work today. For crying
Feels
out
fair.
Loud. That's right. Hey, Amber, the Heat missed out on Bradley Beal. And if anyone's thinking, oh, Amber's on the show and she's down there and so we're talking a lot of Miami, really geniuses, you figured that out? Yeah, that's right.
As
we have
we
local
should.
Knowledge. Amber, what is next for the Heat, or what is thought to be next, at least where you are?
Damian Lillard. I mean, that's it, right? And there was a lot of damage control coming from the Miami Heat organization yesterday. There were a lot of beat writers reporting that the Heat are going to be zeroing in on Damian Lillard. I mean, they were doing that very clearly coinciding with the Bradley Beal news, because the reality is it looks like Pat Riley tried to get Kevin Durant. It came down to the Heat and the Suns. KD ends up with the Suns. Pat Riley, it looks like, tried to get Bradley Beal. It came down to the Heat and the Suns. Beal ends up with the Suns. Ishbia taking Pat Riley's lunch money right now from that perspective. Now, there were beat writers out of Miami yesterday who were reporting that the Heat just weren't aggressive enough, that they did make an offer for Beal, but they were never very aggressive, that it wasn't that Beal chose the Suns over the Heat, that that wasn't it as well, even though he had that no trade clause. It was just that the Heat weren't so aggressive, and the philosophy behind that is they weren't so aggressive for the dude who still had $207 million left on his contract because they're trying to keep all their assets to go after Damian Lillard. Now, the caveat here, Max, Damian Lillard ain't available right now.
At the moment, it appears that he is not. But look, when he's on a podcast saying, Brian Custer asks him point blank, would you rather go here, 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 and lists the possible destinations or likely destinations, and it, out of his mouth like a shot, oh, obviously the Heat, right? He's laughing about it, like clearly the Heat. Of course Heat fans are going to be like, okay, Dame wants to come here. Now, Bradley Beal's agent, Mark Bartlestein, is the father of the Suns' CEO, Josh Bartlestein. So that could have something to, you know, whether or not it does, people will connect those dots. You know, a guy's hired all of a sudden to be in a certain situation, and there's a close familial relationship to a guy's agent, and then that's where the guy ends up. You know, people will connect the dots. Front Office Sports, Bradley Beal's agent, Mark Bartlestein, Phoenix Suns CEO, Josh Bartlestein's Mark's son, right?
But, I mean, it's the father of your agent.
It was a recent hire, too.
It's not like it's the father of your agent. It's not like it's your father, like with what happened with the New York
You don't think
York
that could
Knicks,
have an influence,
right?
Amber?
I mean, from a communication perspective, maybe. Like, your agent can be like, oh, hey, my dad's up there. You know, he's a great guy. Let me introduce you at some point along the line. Maybe there could be some sort of relationship, I suppose, that develops, or just a trust factor because you're linked to that family. But I don't think you're going to an organization.
If they don't have KD and Devin Booker.
Right. Like, he's not going to the organization because his agent's dad's there. Let's be real. Like, he's going to the organization because it's Kevin Durant and because it's Devin Booker. I mean, he's not even going to the organization. Period, dependent on who the CEO is.
But isn't that reality? Isn't that part of the whole thing? Like, I think that absolutely can be a determining factor if it's close between two teams, because that's the guy whispering in your ear, but your agent. But I do agree with this. I have this thought, Amber. You tell me what you think. So if I'm a player and I have a choice, and I think both places give me a reasonable chance to win a championship, one, I have to go, and they're known for, you're going to work your tail off, right? We don't have the most talent, but oh my God, we work so hard, we're going to get it done, and our best player is Jimmy Butler. Versus, you can go to another place, warm weather, by the way, no tax state, like the whole thing, and Kevin Durant and Devin Booker are there. And so there's so much, obviously you have to put in a lot of work in order to get to be as good as those guys, but there is more natural talent there. And you are a talented player. And oh my God, I can go play in the sunshine with two otherworldly players. You know, on the Heat, Beal is easily the best offensive player. And on the Suns, he's the third best offensive player. You know, I think that also has a lot to do with it. It's kind of like, I don't want to undersell the amount of work it takes to be Kevin Durant or Devin Booker, but it's like easier, purer talent on that team and more grinding and just outworking everyone on the Heat. I could see why it's more appealing to go to Phoenix.
Do you want to be the third best at something, though, on the team? Or do you want to be the best at something on the team? I mean, that's a different decision for every single player. Some dudes want to be that guy, and certainly he would have been that guy in terms of offensive production, like you just alluded to. Jimmy Butler is the guy. Like, he is the one. He is the guy on that team. He is going to be the face of that team, no matter who joins that team. But offensively, you're right. I don't know if it's an attraction to Bradley Beal to not be one of the best offensive players on the team, if you want to have that conversation with Phoenix. Ultimately, apparently, it is. I just think there was a lot of factors that went into this. Again, Miami Heat beat writers are reporting, too, that the Heat weren't that aggressive. And so it came down to where the Wizards were getting the better deal. What's hard to stomach from that perspective as a Heat fan is what less could we have offered than what Phoenix offered? Like, how much worse could it have been than what Phoenix...
No pick swaps! Just like the second-round pick! Yeah,
I mean, serious. Or maybe you just couldn't stomach the thought of having Kyle Lowry? Is that what's happening if you're the Washington
Wizards?
Well,
actually, I was listening to the radio this morning, and this very informed broadcaster, Amber Wilson, pointed out that Bradley Beal, in fact, has only averaged 50 games... played a season the last 3 years. So, Amber, given the size of the contract and the number of games he's been available for, maybe Pat Riley and them are thinking that if we get him for a song, but nothing less.
Well, and not a team that enjoys being in the luxury tax. And you're seeing with Phoenix, they don't give a hoot about that luxury tax, right? They will be at the very, very top end of it. And yes, they will have less flexibility because of it under that CBA. But this is an owner willing to spend. Tax the heck out of me as long as I have the big names in my early tenureship as the owner of this team. And that's a very different story down in Miami. A team that was just in the NBA Finals with a bunch of undrafted dudes. I mean, that's the reality of it. Like, if you're the Heat, you're thinking we can create this magic without the $207 million that you have to commit to Bradley Beal, a dude who hasn't been available in the last 5 years. Yeah, he had back-to-back 82 seasons. It's been something like 5 years since he did that. The last few years, he certainly has not been available for the entire season. Not even close.
Nowadays, a guy plays 82 games. The next year, you're almost guaranteed he's hurt somehow. MJ, 98, 9 times played 82 games. You know, best player on both sides of the floor. But somehow
so
nowadays
right
he played 82 games. LeBron, since then, he played all 82 games one time. And since then, he is 50 games, 49 games, whatever
kids
it is.
These
Same
days.
Thing with Bradley Beal.
Get off my lawn. That's
Same
what
thing
you're
with
doing
Bradley
right
Beal.
Now. It's right. Well, and Bradley Beal has been dealing with injuries. In fairness to Bradley Beal, he's also been on the Washington Wizards.
Yeah,
so
right.
Maybe the motivation to get out there ain't quite the same as it's about to be in Phoenix.
No doubt. And also, the level of intensity in all sports goes up year over year. It gets more and more competitive, and they're going 100 miles an hour on every play. Same reason pitchers' arms are falling off in Major League Baseball. It's more intense now than it used to be. All right. Where does Chris Paul land now? He's part of that deal. They're looking to maybe expand the deal so he can land with a contender. KJM.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio. So Bradley Beal is in Phoenix or heading to Phoenix. What does that mean for Chris Paul? Amber Wilson in for the guys on this Juneteenth. So Chris Paul, the interesting thing is when he's on the court, his production is actually still very good. The issue throughout his career has been given his size and his usage rate and just bad luck. He's frequently not healthy and available in the playoffs when you need him most. And Bradley Beal is 8 years younger. The Washington Wizards are finalizing the trade to send three-time All-Star guard Bradley Beal to Phoenix for a package expected, as I mentioned, Chris Paul, Landry Shamet, several second-round picks, pick swaps, sources told ESPN. The deal could take a few days to be completed, as the Wizards will be allowed to field offers to widen the deal to a three-team trade to give Chris Paul a chance to land with a contender. So where does he land? And how much interest do you have in actually being part of that deal, like if you're a fan base of a certain team? Amber, I still think Chris Paul, especially if there's a buyout or the acquiring team doesn't really have to pay him, in that case, he becomes extremely attractive, because even if he starts and closes the game, you could limit his minutes to 20, 25 minutes a game and have him healthy for the playoffs for like the first time in his career, basically. Then he'd become a very attractive commodity, in my view. Where are you with Chris Paul?
I mean, where I am at with Chris Paul is that he's 38 years old. He's certainly not in his prime anymore, but there's going to be a market for a guy who's a superstar in this league, no matter at what point in his career he's at. Some of it is going to depend, like you just said, because I know Woj was reporting that the reason that this deal was being held up a little bit with Phoenix was because they were trying to figure out if they could bring in a third team to facilitate a trade there for CP3. He wants to go to a contender, Woj said in that reporting. And you would imagine at this point in his career, of course he wants to be on a contender. He was just on a contender. There will be contenders interested in Chris Paul, even if he's not the player he once was. You're talking about a player that averaged almost 14 points per game, 4.3 boards, about 9 assists, 59 games this past season, shooting 44% from the floor, about 38% from deep. Chris Paul still has something left to give a team, but what is going to remain to be seen? Now, there's a lot of talk right now about the Clippers, right? Because, of course, he spent a lot of years there with the Clippers, and this is what we do in the NBA. If it worked 6-7 years ago, then why can't it work now, right? And he would be joining two players that also have massive injury concerns. I don't really see the attraction with the Clippers, but I understand when Chris Paul was part of his best, he was there with that organization. Certainly they have a lot of affection there for Chris Paul. And if he was healthy, if you had Paul George, Kawhi, and Chris Paul all healthy, fine. But any of these teams that we throw out there with CP3 seems to be an issue with how much is he going to be able to give you in the postseason? Is he going to be healthy? That particular team, you're talking about that with all of the stars on that team.
Yeah, by the way, a couple things. It didn't work the first time with the Clippers. It did not. They never got out of the second round.
Well, he, right.
Blake,
he was
Lob
great.
City,
yeah.
And everything. They never got out of the second round. They had some playoff collapses, right? He was the best player on the team, and it just didn't work. Mm-hmm. And going back to the Clippers, it worked. It looked good with Westbrook. You know, they needed a guy like Westbrook on that team, and it looked good with him. The Lakers, to me, have always made the most sense for Chris Paul and for the Lakers, provided that he comes basically free. You know, if there's a buyout or if there's some situation where you're really not having to pay the guy, then you can keep your roster and add a floor general point guard who can score at all three levels. Chris Paul's got the mid-range. He could, you know, they give him 5 steps to the basket, so that helps when he turns the corner. And he can shoot from distance. So he gives you spacing and basketball IQ. And if it comes basically free for the Lakers, why would they not do that and keep the guys that they like? And again, the pitch would be to Chris Paul, you're going to start games, you're going to close games. You're not going to play as many minutes as you're used to because you're 38 years old and we'd like you to win a championship. We'd like to win a championship. The way to do that is to have you healthy in the playoffs. We'd like to maximize, optimize the chances that could happen. But that, to me, always has made the most sense. A team looking for a point guard who can take some pressure off LeBron, not looking to break the bank on that guy, and a guy who looking for a championship and one of the banana boat guy. He wants to play with LeBron, right? That, to me, makes sense, Amber. It makes
right.
sense.
So either way, he's ending up in L.A., and either way, he's ending up with a team where the other two superstars also have a problem staying healthy. I mean, that's the reality of it. Now we're load managing AD, we're load managing LeBron, and we're load managing CP3. From a basketball perspective, though, I agree with you. If, in fact, he gets waived, with The Athletic was reporting the Lakers would be interested if, in fact, he gets waived. You have D'Angelo Russell. You have Dennis Schroeder becoming free agents
this
summer.
Do you really have D'Angelo Russell, Amber?
Do you really want him back in LA? You don't. You need an upgrade. Of course, you don't. That's the point, is those guys are free agents. You need an upgrade at the point guard position. And Chris Paul will be the ball handler that you want if he can stay healthy and if you can get him for next to nothing. Plus, nobody loves a superstar on the back end of their career who he's friends with more than LeBron James. He just wants to play with all of his old buddies, him and CP3, obviously really close.
Yeah, it's true. Now, Fred VanVleet. Is another guy whose name comes up, and at the right price, he would be amazing.
Better, younger.
Yeah, he's really good, and I think part of the appeal to a lot of people, not Kyrie Irving, doesn't come with the same, I don't want to say off-court, yeah, I'd say off-court distractions. Kyrie seems as though he is looking for causes larger than himself and bigger than basketball, and VanVleet just looks like a worker who's going to come up and help you win. I think that at least is fair or not. And I think there is some fairness to that, but there's a perception of that around the league. But I think also there's a sense that maybe VanVleet comes cheaper than a guy like Kyrie. If that is not the case, he becomes a lot less attractive. Again, you wind up looking at Chris Paul and going, man, because D'Angelo Russell's a non-starter in L.A. He was unplayable on both sides of the floor when they needed him most, right? If D'Angelo Russell was even a pretty good player in the playoffs for L.A., who knows what would have happened in that Denver series. They were competitive games, even though they got swept, all four of them. But you got to move on from D'Angelo Russell. That frees up some money. And if you don't have to, if that money can go, those resources can go to keeping guys like Austin Reeves and Hachimura, who played very well, and you could just add a guy like Chris Paul, I understand that that's attractive. I don't know that it puts the Lakers over the top in terms of competing with the Nuggets and now maybe the Suns. But
I don't know if anything does, right? I don't know if any of these names that would be available to the Lakers. I mean, they certainly don't have unlimited resources here. If I was a Lakers fan, I would be more excited about the prospect of VanVleet mm-hmm. than I would about CP3. Sure. Just because we're talking about a dude in his 20s. We're talking about a guy who I think is a very, very good player. I think he'd be an excellent fit there. No,
but
he doesn't
Amber,
have the friendship with
apples.
LeBron. But
Amber,
it's not.
Let me before we get out of here on this segment, let me put it to you like this. VanVleet is not apples to apples with Chris Paul. If it means, in your opinion, VanVleet, but you have to lose Reeves and Hachimura, or at least one of them, or Chris Paul and you keep everyone, what do you like then?
Well, so that's the key, right? Yes, I can understand if you can keep everybody and Chris Paul, then we're talking. But man, VanVleet feels like more of a difference maker to me because of his age, because of what you could get out of him for years. With CP3, you're going to be in a situation where you're like, we have to hit on it this year or bust. Also, there's this whole thing out there with LeBron. Like, is he going to be on the Lakers after this season? Are you trying to make things more attractive in LA for LeBron, even though he's approaching 40 years old? Would VanVleet do that? And it relieves some of that pressure because he's a much younger guy and a really good player. I mean, there's a lot of factors there, obviously, to consider. If you're the Lakers, I would be strongly considering the addition of VanVleet. Also a clutch client.
Yeah, I agree. VanVleet, if he could be had and you could keep either Reeves or Hachimura,
right,
that might be the move. Should Michael Jordan's ineptitude as an owner affect the way we perceive him overall? You know, in the GOAT conversation, boy, LeBron stans will try anything. But let's try this. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max. Amber Wilson in for Key and Jay on this Juneteenth ESPN Radio.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
The irony of Michael Jordan is that he turned out to be the Michael Jordan of bad owners. Like the Michael Jordan of something. Once upon a time in sports, it was the 27 Yankees. Then it was the 85 Bears. Like things that meant the greatest ever. The Michael Jordan of something worldwide means you're the best ever at what you do. He is the Michael Jordan of bad owners. Has there, like, has there been
That's not fair. I mean, he's not a Daniel Snyder type, right? I mean, well, I can name a lot of owners that are worse for a lot of other reasons.
I mean, competitively, Amber, just competitively, yeah, he's the Michael Jordan of bad owners. I don't think anyone was worse competitively than Michael Jordan during his tenure.
There's a lot of owners that are not competitive. I mean, look at what's happening right now with the Oakland A's. But he was not a good owner
in
overall.
Basketball? Who was a worse owner than Michael Jordan?
Well, in basketball, again, if we're just talking about the competition on the court, because there's been questionable things in the NBA as well,
the competition on the court,
his tenure in Charlotte has not worked out very well from a competitive perspective. I will concede there.
Amber, on ESPN2, winning percentage, 26th in the league. Playoff appearances, tied for 28th. There are only 30 teams in the league. Playoff wins, tied for 28th. I guess that makes the point. He's like the second or third worst owner over that over that time. Oh, my God. He was a putrid owner. He agreed to sell his majority stake in the Charlotte Hornets to a group led by Gabe Plotkin and Rick Schnall for approximately a $3 billion valuation, according to league sources. The transaction ends Jordan's 13-year run as majority owner. Now, of course, as a player, in spite of the misperception of LeBron fans, he's clearly the greatest of all time. Six-time NBA champion. Never lost a playoff series that he was favored to win, ever. The one against the Pistons when Pippen got a migraine in Game 7. I don't remember who was the favorite there. Anyway, he's...
Didn't go to nearly as many NBA finals.
Well, I mean, he went every single time he had a... Every single time Jordan played with a single other All-Star, he won the finals in under 7 games, Amber. Every time. Mm-hmm. Like, all that, well, he had to learn how to win, is utter nonsense. He literally didn't play with a single other All-Star.
Different era.
Yet consistently made the playoffs and was going bananas in the playoffs, but wasn't playing with anyone. Then they gave him Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen's first All-Star game, first All-Star appearance, still pre-prime, but he made the All-Star team. They took the defending champion Pistons 7 games. Pippen got a migraine in Game 7, scored 2 points. In other words, Jordan was without another All-Star, so they lost. The only
You've never sounded younger, Max, than you sound right now.
The only other time he lost is when he came back from playing baseball, didn't have his legs, and they lost to the Magic. Mm-hmm. That was it. Otherwise, every time, every single time, you gave him a single other All-Star, he smote the league. He smoked them. He destroyed everybody. Destroyed them.
You know who never had to leave to play another sport? You know, leave to play another sport, air quotes there. That LeBron James guy. He didn't ever have to leave the league for any reason.
All the metrics, Amber. Forget about all the extra stuff. Jordan doesn't need the, look at the sneaker sales. All the metrics say in his prime he was the greatest player of all time. Like, he hit the highest peak. So if we want to talk career value, no one's going to touch LeBron. The best argument is Kareem. Right? Those guys played at an incredibly high level for an incredibly long time. If you're talking about peak value sustained for a reasonable period of time, say 10 years or more, come on. What are we talking about?
I mean, MJ's the greatest to me too, Max, but you and I are about the same age, I think, right? And so much of this conversation is always generational, but none of this conversation has anything to do with Michael Jordan as an owner. Because if you're entrenched in your position like you are, that MJ is the greatest of all time, you think he's the greatest of all time, regardless of anything he did in Charlotte. That's the reality of it. And if LeBron goes on to be the greatest owner ever in the history of the NBA, you're still going to think MJ is the best player of all time.
I'm actually waiting for a guy to be greater than MJ. I was thinking, like, hey, if Giannis improves his handles 15% and shoots 15% better, could he be? I'd love to see the guy supplant him, and just LeBron ain't it. But LeBron came closest to me anyway. But as an owner, oh my God. Like, here's an opportunity for LeBron to say, wait a minute, when LeBron eventually owns a team, which is pretty clear is what's going to happen, he has a chance to be like, hold on. I played much longer than MJ. I played at nearly the same level at my peak. I played. I made everyone around me better all the time. I dragged teams that were pathetic without me to the finals. Of course, you can't win without another All-Star. Like, no one, including MJ. And then on top of that, stood up for issues off the court, not as it relates to China, but for other things. Right? He gets credit for that, and eventually goes on to be a successful owner. He'll be like the way Jerry West is to the Lakers. You could argue the most important figure in the history of the Lakers is, in fact, Jerry West, because as a player, he was not quite Kobe or Magic, but not that far off. And then he was one of the greatest executives, maybe the greatest executive in the history of American team sports, right? Like, you kind of add it all up. LeBron has an opportunity here, Amber.
He has an opportunity. I mean, if we're having the off-the-court conversation, LeBron's already surpassed MJ, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been zero controversy, or nearly zero. You mentioned China, they're fine. But there's been nearly zero controversies in LeBron James's entire career. And I'm talking stemming back to high school. Yeah, I mean, that amazing. Man was a child star. He grew up under the limelight as much as any other child star in that sport ever has. And for him to have such a lack of issues, such a lack of controversy in his life, also during the social media age, we see what's happening with John Morant and everybody else out here. It is remarkable that LeBron has been able to do what he's been able to do. And he does all the right things off the court as well with his charities and everything else, a family guy, all that stuff. LeBron off the court already wins. And so this is more off the court stuff to me, right? Where yes, he may end up being a much better executive, and the path is paved for him to be a much better executive in this league than Michael Jordan, because MJ wasn't particularly good at it as an owner. But at the same time, I don't think it has any bearing on the Amber, real conversation about these two guys, because the conversation about these two guys centers on basketball. Because if we're having a conversation about something other than basketball, LeBron's already the greatest.
Right, but Amber, it's not exactly that. I agree that LeBron's ability, the fact that the spotlight's been on him as intensely as it has since he's 15, and he's been exemplary. No one's perfect, but oh my God, how much more perfect do you want to be?
As close
and
as you
and
can
not
go.
Just not stepping in it, but putting himself squarely in the spotlight during controversial or important moments in American popular culture and even American history, political history, is amazing that he's made positive contributions. Forget about just not stepping in it. But I do think what he does as an owner is different, because that does affect what happens on the court. So if you're an owner or a GM, it doesn't affect your reputation as a player. But as a basketball figure, I don't think that's the same as simply expanding the business, selling sneakers, being a part of a social movement or anything like that. I think it's different. The reason I brought up Jerry West is because his behavior as an executive led to Lakers championships. If LeBron James adds to his resume by owning a team and being successful in winning championships as a player, no. But as a winner in basketball history, yes, I think he gets extra points for that.
He wouldn't be doing it as the president, though, of the team, right? Like, if he's the GM, it's a different story.
See what I do? I leave you not enough.
You left me 10 seconds. Now we've got five.
I use up some of that. Amber Wilson, in for me and JKJ.
That's how you win an argument. Well done.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.